Welcome to the Clinical Pre-Hospital Care Research Forum Journal Club. Here in our PCRF Journal Club, we promote evidence-based practices by critically evaluating the latest science in emergency medical services. We hope our discussion will help advance EMS practice. Through the generous support of our sponsors, Limmer Education and ESO, we are able to make science more accessible and understandable.
All right, welcome everyone to the May 2025 edition of the Pre-Hospital Care Research Forum Journal Club podcast. Special thank you again to our sponsors, Limmer Education and ESO, for making it possible for us to gather here today and talk about the latest research. I am Rimley Crow, and I am joined by Jeff Rollman. We are also over the moon excited to have with us from the authorship team of this paper, Drs. Sunche Kim, Sunil Kim, and Kathy Dunn. As a reminder to those of you at home, the name of the article that we are reviewing is Aggressive Behavior Risk Assessment Tool for Emergency Medical Services, and this was published in JSEP Open. As always, our discussion is paired with an article written by our very own columnist, Michael Caduce, in EMS World. It's called Journal Watch. Encourage all of you listeners to check it out at emsworld.com under the category of Education and Training. Thank you to all of you in the audience who are joining live today. Just as a reminder, you are able to use the chat feature on your screen to type in questions and comments, and we'll bring those into the conversation as we go. And so without further ado, I would like to introduce our authors who have shared their time generously with us. So thank you again. I'll ask each of you to share just a little bit about who you are, what you do, and I'm curious always about how did you get involved with EMS research? So we can start with Sunche Kim.
Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Sunche Kim. I'm a nurse myself. I teach a School of Nursing, Point Loma Nazarene University. I've been working on this topic, Aggressive Behavior Risk Assessment Tool, since 2009. So I'm very happy to share this tool for EMS clinician today.
Thank you so much for being here and joining us. And Sunil.
This is Sunil Kim. I'm an internal medicine doc, and interested in this field a while back.
Always love having collaborators from different fields. Thank you for being here. And Kathy.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having us. Kathy Dunn, and I have been involved in the pre-hospital world for over 30 years in the transport realm. So ground and air medical transport, critical care, hospital-based as well as community-based. And research has always been a world that I have migrated towards because it gives us so much substance from which we can launch. So much of what we do is anecdotal or best practice or expert opinion, especially in the neonatal pediatric world, which is a predominance of where I worked. So research has always pulled me in, and I just find the work fascinating.
Me as well. And those who are listening, I'm sure feel similarly. There's so much we can learn, and especially about today's topic. Today's topic is a tough one. It's one that hits home for quite a few EMS clinicians. We're going to be talking about violence in the field and a new tool that might help us to predict and even prevent it. So I would like to hear maybe just a little bit of background on this from any of the authors, but curious about how you came across this assessment and perhaps some background on what others may have been using before this assessment was evaluated.
Yes, I'm happy to share about this. I'm going to call it ABRET, which is the tool to identify potentially violent patients. The reason that I was working on this, we had a lot of incidents that in the hospital setting, especially against nurses by patients. So my interest in this topic was started since 2009. So actually the ABRET for EMS is the last in the series of tools for identifying potentially violent patients in various settings. I'd like to give a little bit of background about all different versions and how we arrived to this study on ABRAD EMS. The first ABRAD was done in medical surgical unit using pen and paper in 2009, which was a 10-item violent behavior indicator with yes, no, kind of checklist response. Then we modified the original 10-item ABRAD for use in long-term care home. We named it as ABRAD L. Subsequently, we further modified the tool for use in emergency department, and we embedded the tool in electronic health record, which led to an interventional study of over 77,000 patients. And then we show that screening patient with ABRAD ED to identify potentially violent patient and posting a simple signage for small fraction of high risk patients result in significant reduction in violent event. Actually, study showed an offset by 27% reduction of violent event. We also have shown a similar reduction in violent event among adolescents within the emergency department. So after that, what we did, we modified the original ABRAD by integrating tool into electronic health record and validate tool for non-psychiatric acute care patients, resulting in ABRAD H for hospitalized patient. Finally, we recently modified ABRAD ED for use in ground transport EMS and called it as the ABRAD EMS. So summary, we have a total four different version of ABRAD. ABRAD L for long-term care home setting, ABRAD ED for emergency department, and ABRAD H for acute care unit, and ABRAD EMS for ground transport EMS. And so these are the all validated tool as with the satisfactory sensitivity and specificity, which indicate utility of these tools in identifying potentially violent patients. With that tools, now we have next step is doing interventional study. So we've done interventional study, as I mentioned earlier, emergency department, which showed significant reduction in violent event with a simple posting of signage for targeting that small fraction of high-risk patients. Currently, we have a two ongoing study. One, interventional study among hospitalized acute care patients using ABRAD H and posting signage for high-risk patients. Study will be completed. It's a 10-month study, will be completed this August. And second, ongoing study is a pre-hospital setting that we collaborate with Kathy and her team. We just started the study in air transport EMS, involving 44 states across the country. And actually today is the go live date for this air transport EMS study. So we are very, very excited about this study. So now we have a different version, and you're going to ask why we have a different version of ABRAD. It is important having a different version of ABRAD for various clinical setting because this tool identify significant predictor for violent behavior, and each patient characteristics slightly different from where they are. So it's important to have valid, a little bit updated ABRAD items and have a test to validate for specific settings. During the process, in the process of ABRAD development, we also learn that it is important to have a screening tool, but also we need to have a standardized companion tool that can collect the data of violent event, also severity in objective manner. So we developed and validated a tool called violent event severity two or FAST. So with this FAST, and so ABRET is for screening tool. And then we use VEST to collect, measure actual violent events. So this tool cannot use simultaneously as a companion tools. So what's the benefit of screening tool, validated screening tool like ABRET tools, is to identify, again, potentially violent patients that will allow implementation of proactive targeted violent prevention measure, which that's the main purpose of this study. You know, we've been talking about universal precaution that treat every patient as potentially violent, but that can really hinder kind of preventive measure, resource allocation. It can also hinder a therapeutic alliance between patient and provider. It's much better to target the high-risk patient using a validated screening tool. So now let's come back to this study. So that's kind of overall background. Now I want to focus on this study, the ABRET for EMS. You know, the patient violence against EMS clinician is a serious occupational hazard because it has a significant negative impact on their mental health, physical health, even physical injuries. And it has been reported that the rate of violence-related non-fatal injury among EMS clinicians about sixfold higher than all other workers, healthcare workers, and even is 64% higher than nurses. In an acute care setting, nurses are the most common victims of workplace violence, patient violence, but even EMS clinicians higher, 64% higher than registered nurses. So we know that when healthcare workers injured, they cannot come to work. So according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the absence or days away from work due to violence-related injuries among EMS clinicians have increased by 7 times since 2007. So despite this high rate of patient violence-related injury, underreporting is very common and it hinders accurate assessments of violent rates, also actual outcome of any preventive measure. So there's a lot of papers out published about what are the common contributing factors of underreporting, especially among EMS clinicians, include, again, misperception that it is part of job. Patients are sick, they are in distress, they are confused, they have a dementia. So that's kind of empathy toward patient is very common factor for underreporting of patient violence. And the other part is the unclear definition of workplace violence in the agency. That's another common reason, a common factor for underreporting. And then that can lead to, again, lack of clear policy and procedures of patient violence or any preventive measure. And recent study reported that about 2/3 of EMS agencies do not have written policy and procedures on patient violence. And almost half of the survey participants reported not having adequate training about patient violence. So first step with all this, you know, impact of this problem, first step toward the reduction of patient violence and protecting safety of EMS clinician is having a validated screening tool. That's the first step. So and then that the tool should be performed very quickly in the field. We know how busy, chaotic when they arrive at the scene. So it's very short, easy to use, and can be quickly performed. And actually, the National Association of State EMS officials recommend using violence risk assessment tools to help guide management of patients displaying violent behaviors. Recommended tools include RAS, Richmond Agitation Sedation Scale, Altered Mental Status Scale, and Behavioral Activity Rating Scale. For example, RAS initially developed to assess level of consciousness, responsiveness, and to detect delirium among patients in intensive care unit. Although these tools are useful to us for assessing patients' level of consciousness, but none of them have been validated for identifying patients at risk of violence before screening is before that occurrence of such violent event occurs in pre-hospital setting. Now, so in our study, what we found that in hospital setting, emergency department, psychiatric units are most common setting for patient violence against healthcare workers. In fact, many of emergency department psychiatric unit patients are encountered by EMS clinicians in pre-hospital setting. So we have ABRED ED has been tested, validated with a satisfactory sensitivity and specificity. So we want to use whether, we want to see whether using modified ABRED ED would be useful in pre-hospital setting. So in our study, in this study, the objective of our study was to validate the utility of ABRED ED. I'm going to talk about more about ABRED ED a little bit later, modified for pre-hospital setting. Because again, early identification of such violent behavior may allow proactive implementation of targeted violent prevention measure. So more specific aims was to determine prevalence of violent event. We do not have any actual very solid evidence about rape, you know, patient violence, a lot of things from healthcare workers recall, you know, asking, have you have any violent event for last week or last 6 months? A lot of recall basis. It's not actual hard data. But in our study, we want to determine the prevalence rate, the violence rate among patients in pre-hospital setting. Second aim was to select parsimonious setup modified ABRED item that we want to reduce, remember, in a pre-hospital setting. So we want to select very significant independent predictors of, from ABRED ED item. Once we have that come up with a small set of ABRED item, we want to estimate sensitivity and specificity, which is basically assessing utility, usefulness of ABRED for EMS setting. And in our study, we use physical assault, physical threat, sexual harassment as a violent event, and prevalence of violent event was defined as number of event per 100 EMS encounters. That's our definition of violent event. And should I go at more about the tool in here?
Sure. So I'll interject there and give some compliments, because I think it's important for our audience to understand how challenging it is sometimes to use something that was developed for another setting. And we are so used to doing this in EMS that it's really nice to see a research group take a tool and say, we recognize that EMS is a unique setting and we want to adapt that tool to the EMS setting where we know what the situation is going to be like. It's going to be unpredictable. It's going to be fast paced. So we need a tool that is nice and concise and highly predictive of that outcome that we're seeking to avoid, which is violent behavior. So perhaps you could continue just chatting a little bit, and we might bring Kathy in as well. I'd like to talk about how your methods here. How did you go about testing that ABRAT item that was adapted for the EMS?
Okay, so it was a wonderful collaborative project between nurse and physician and our Kathy from EMS representative there. But basically, what we did, we use ABRED ED, member patient characteristic in emergency department and EMS of area pre-hospital, very similar. So we want to adopt ABRED ED, but we need to modify. For example, in our ABRED ED, it has 7 items. So for example, 2 history items, history of aggression, history of mental illness, and then 4 violent behavior indicator that require observation, and then 1 item, reason for ED visit. In our emergency department study, that chief complaint patient present in triage, very important indicator, like a psychiatric evaluation, suicidal ideation attempt, aggressive behavior or behavioral health concern, came out positive predictor for violent event. But those that item is was not appropriate for EMS pre-hospital settings. So we modified as a reason for dispatch. So those are, so we got 7 items. And then we have a VEST. We want to use companion tool to measure violent event. Original VEST was developed based on new and revised definition of workplace violence by the Joint Commission. So the original VEST has 6 items. For example, physical assault, physical threat, verbal threat, and verbal abuse, written threat, and sexual harassment. And in our study, we need to provide operational definition. Remember, unclear definition led to underreporting. So we want to provide the objective, clearly written operational definition. So we provide it. And also in each violent type, we also measure severity grade. So for example, grade 1 is the mild, grade 2, moderate, grade 3, severe, grade 4, life-threatening. So let me give some example. Physical assault, because we used it in our study. Physical assault, operational definition was physical contact with the intent to cause bodily harms. That was the definition. The definition of grade 1 physical assault was no physical injury. Grade 2, physical assault, physical injuries there, but requiring no medical attention. Grade 3, severe physical assault, is a physical injury there, requiring medical attention. Grade 4, life-threatening physical injury. Very specific operational definition. In our EMS study, with the recommendation of, because the busy, chaotic, you know, the first encounter, we really want to reduce documentation burden. So violent event, we select 3 highest critical event, physical assault, physical threat, and sexual harassment. So that was our kind of agreed upon our outcome. And then Kat can explain how they're embedded in data collection and settings.
Yeah, so we have a tool that we want to test, the ABRAT, adapted for EMS. We have a tool to measure the outcome, the violence across those 3 categories. And now, Kathy, I would like you to walk us through, how do we go about testing it in a real world setting? What did you all do and with who?
Great question. So we really concentrated on trying to relieve the work burden of the frontline folks, because we knew if we were choosing bases that did hundreds of calls a day, we got the study done over 10,000 encounters in less than 2 months, just to give you an idea. And we only chose 2 different programs in different regions of the country. So one was in the Northeast and one was in the Southwest. One was very heavily 911 response. The other was very heavily IFT response. And we did that complimentary, just to see if anything else would bloom that we needed to be looking at. We found this, we considered this very foundational, and we were very interested in seeing what else would become a hot zone for us and on a heat map, a place for us to look further and investigate further into. So we did some teaching, put together a PowerPoint, did some teaching, developed the tool, made it as easy for them as possible. We gave them a QR code and a link, and then we would get the metadata to see what percentage used QR code versus link to see what was easier for them. So even in the metadata, we were purposeful in saying what really works, what doesn't work for them, because it needs to work for them. They are so busy doing back-to-back calls, and delays will not be accepted in any way, shape, or form. We cannot be delayed at bedside. So two of the assessment criteria in the ABRAT EMS were somewhat static. So the reason for dispatch and past medical history, which we can get after the fact. The one really important piece was the assessment from the time you meet the patient until you get the patient on your litter. That is the assessment period that we're trying to capture, because once we clip them in on our litter, we are in forward motion to transport. We want to capture the signs and symptoms that may trigger a flag for us or a warning that the patient has the potential to become aggressive or violent in transport. That's the assessment period that we defined for our people. So we did some training and they picked right up on it. We knew we needed over 80% compliance for the patients who were inclusive in the study design, but also for to get really credible and reliable data, we needed at least 80% capture of a QR code that was affiliated with that patient encounter. And our ground crews, I got to tell you, we just have amazing people working in the pre-hospital environment. And I honestly, my hat off to them with all the just the occupational exposure of the everyday work that is being done. And then with the increasing violence that we're seeing in their workplace. And then, I can tell you the eMERGE study was very sobering. 81% documented some emotional injury and harm. 73% of the time, it was the patient was the assailant in that study, and so we did concentrate on that dynamic. It was patient to provider violence, so it wasn't anybody else. There were encounters where there was violence happening on scene that was not directed towards provider. We didn't include those for this study, and we did concentrate on the physical for the many reasons that we just talked about, just to try to condense the study, make it very pointed, and to give us some reliable data that's foundational.
Right. I think this is so important, is taking, the items that we develop behind a desk, we think they're ready to go, and we think the burden is low, and then testing it in the real world. And I love that you highlighted that the two settings were selected intentionally for one that has a lot of interfacility transport and one that does a lot of primary 911 scene, because we know that those of us who live in the field know that these incidents are unfortunately not uncommon, meaning that they actually are common, and that we need a tool in both of these settings. And I'm very much looking forward to the next study that Sanjay hinted at, and the aeromedical transports as well. But I know that our listeners are very anxious to hear what you all found. And so, Sunil, maybe you could take us through just high level, and we'll all chime in with questions, I'm sure. But high level, talk us through what were some of the findings?
Yeah, sure. There were a total of a little bit more than 11,000 dispatches in this study. And we included some 2,200 patients, because of age younger than 10 years. There were 67 patients who were dead, so the violence, and then some canceled transported by. And there were 1,800 missing data. So we had the total of 9,000 of that. There were 106.
Hey, Sunil, Can you get closer to the microphone? I think you're breaking up a little bit.
Sorry about that. Yeah,
I thought it might be my internet connection, but thank you.
No problem. Yeah. That was much better. Thank you.
Okay, so, and we had 105 violent events, which made the event rate 1.16%. And so the 9,000 patients that that we were able to analyze, the patient characteristics were of the 9,000 patients, the I think the mean age and we looked at the difference between the overall population versus the patient with violent event, and the patient with violent event was slightly younger, and then in contrast to our previous study in emergency department, in the emergency department there are a lot of patients, like tenfold higher patients who had mental issues, and as compared to all comers in the ED, whereas here the difference wasn't as great in terms of the mental health issues that the patients were having, so that's the patient characteristic. And then we did the that's the patient characteristics. If you can show the next slide. Okay, now from the Obrad ED, the tool, it turns out that the history, there were two historical items, the history of mental illness, history of aggression. There was some difference. There were more patients who had a history of aggression and more patients with mental illness. But the thing that was really striking was the patient who had behaviors of aggressive, threatening behavior. The overall population, only 2.4% had such behavior. But the patient who had violent events, 71% showing aggressive or threatening behavior. Agitation, 7.6% overall, 74% among the violent patients. The confusion, 6.3% in the overall and 26% in among the violent patient. And then the dispatch reasons, the difference between the two wasn't really that great. So there was some difference between the two, and you can sort of tell that those items that Obrad ED items that had the big difference will probably end up being the significant factors in the Obrad EMS. If you can show the next slide. So in the paper, if you can go on to the next slide. Okay. The figure two shows the various different types of violent event and their severity. Most of the events, fortunately, were grade one, which is mild, but there were some who had moderately severe violent event and some severe violent event among in the type of the violent events and the severity. And then next slide. Okay, now what we did is that we did logistic regression analysis, and the purpose of this logistic regression analysis, and it's a backward elimination method, it's a statistical terminology. And what it does, it looks for independent factors that are significant predictors of violent event and try to minimize the number of items so that we end up with a parsimonious set of factors that are critical. And so we included the bivariate correlation, all these factors that are significant, and put that into the logistic regression analysis. And then the next slide would show the logistic regression result. If you can go to the next slide. Okay. And what we found is that only three factors. So over at ED in the emergency department, it had seven items, but it shrank down to only three items, which is a good news for busy EMS clinicians. And it turned out that aggressive threatening behavior, as expected, has odds ratio of 43. It's a significant predictor. If the patient is agitated, the odds ratio was 5.2. And if the patient is confused, it was also independent significant predictors. And based on the odds ratio, we assign weight value so that the factor that the predictor that has the highest odd ratio, we weigh them heavier so that it's a more predictive. When we add up the numbers, it'll be more predictive. Next slide. Okay, the figure three shows the instance of violence on the vertical axis, and on the horizontal axis is the upright EMS score. This is purely based on those just three items. And if the patient had none of those three items, none of the confusion or aggressive behavior, then it'll be zero. And then there's a maximum score of seven if the patient displayed all three kind of type of behavior. And so with zero, score of zero, only 18 patients out of 7,877, very low low risk of violent event. Whereas as you go to a higher upright EMS score, to seven, if the patient has all these behaviors, then it's 21 out of 42. 50%. And so it's a very nice upward sloping curve. As the upright EMS score goes higher the risk of violent event. And if you can go to the next slide. Okay, this is a statistical picture that shows how good it is differentiating, how good this tool is in differentiating the violent versus nonviolent patient. The diagonal line is when a test, if you do a blood test, if the blood test is no good, then you end up with a diagonal line that it doesn't matter, but it cannot distinguish. Whereas the actual curve was nicely separated away from this diagonal line. Diagonal line has area under the curve of 0.5. 0.50, and what we obtain is that area under the curve is 0.89. The perfect test would have 1.00, and it would be essentially like a square curve. And so 0.89 is very good discriminating test, and it was statistically significant. Next slide. Okay, and the table four shows the at various different cutoff, the sensitivity versus the specificity. And at the cutoff score of one, so one or above, the sensitivity was 82.9%, specificity was 88.1%, which is very acceptable score. Now, what we would recommend. Now, as you have higher and higher cutoff, you would lose, you'd miss the violent patient. So at cutoff score of one, you catch 83%. So 17% of potentially of the violent patient, you end up missing. At cutoff score of higher cutoff score of four, the sensitivity is 71%, which means you miss 29% of the violent patient. But on the other hand, the positive predictive value is 34.2%, which indicates that if a patient has score of four or higher, 34%, about one third, a little bit more than one third of the patient would end up being violent. Yeah, I think that's the last figure. Is that another slide? Figure table. I think that's it, right?
Yep, that's the last one.
Okay. So these numbers indicate that this tool, just very simple tool with just three items, and you can probably memorize the three. If the patient shows aggressive behavior, that's a very, very high risk. If the patient is confused or if the patient is agitated, those are the three items that I think EMS can, I think a lot of people can just memorize that those are the critical factors. Now, in contrast to Abrett ED, where the historical item, if the patient had mental health history or if the patient were violent before, it turned out that that was not relevant. And our guess is because the EMS clinician wouldn't have much of a background on the particular patient that they encounter on the field. So you don't know if the patient had mental health history, whereas in the ED, you know, there may be family and other people, or you can just ask the patient in a gentle kind of way. Have you ever felt so mad that you felt like punching somebody and things like that? But here, those things did not become a part of the tool, and only the three actual behavior items turned out to be the critical one.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Drs. Kim and Kathy. Definitely was great to see that something that seems like it's pretty complex could be kind of simplified. But we know that you put a ton of work into this. I know you said since 2009, you've been working on this tool and adapting it for EMS. So really commend you for joining us today, and definitely appreciate that you were able to publish this and share this process and the results. But I want to back up just a little bit to the actual training and implementation. And you glossed over it a little bit. Oh, we trained them and made it seem like it was easy. We know that's no big, that's no easy task, especially when there were hundreds of EMS clinicians involved, multiple EMS agencies, and then just trying to get through like what you talked about before in the beginning. Some people might think, oh, this is just a part of the job. I signed up since I'm an EMT or a paramedic. I know I'm going to have people that are going to be violent towards me. And really that mindset change, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what the training process entailed, since you clearly got a ton of buy-in. They were able to document this, and that wasn't just some magic wand. I'm sure you were doing a lot behind the scenes. So if you don't mind sharing more, please.
Of course. So we were also thoughtful about the bases that we chose. We had lost one of our providers in 2021 who was shot by a patient assailant and succumbed to his injuries. Jacob is his name. And his partner was also shot but survived. And that really doesn't go away. That doesn't go away. And we really put our heads down to try to figure out what could we do to give our people agency in advocating and maybe preempting even a response that could be amended if there were triggers even in the dispatch, right? So we were thoughtful. We picked an Arizona base for that reason. We thought it might be somewhat cathartic for that group to be part of something active to help in a preventative way, not in a reactive way, but a more proactive way. And they jumped on it. They jumped all over it. And then similarly, we had folks who had really increasing fears of their workplace and the violence that they were seeing in the Northeast. And so we chose that base, and their volumes were very, very high. So we knew we were going to be chasing people. It's human nature, right? How many times do you change your password and you put in the old one before you finally your mind finally gets, oh, I do have a new password, 7 on average, right? So we knew we'd be chasing people. And just knowing that going in helped to relieve our frustration. So this was an up at 4 a.m. every morning, looking at the data, seeing who we had to chase to truly get that capture rate that gave us credible data. And so we were shooting for over 80%. And I think we achieved between 93 and 94% capture rate for every encounter that was inclusion criteria. We had a QR code survey to go with it. And QR code 99.9% of the time, if you're wondering. not link. They want a QR code. Makes it very simple for them. So we did, you know, we were thoughtful in how we presented this and said, hey, we can't find a validated tool anywhere. So you are blazing a trail that hasn't been blazed. And we would love for you to be part of this, but this is what it's going to take. And you're going to get annoyed with us because we're going to chase you. We want valid data out of this. And they tolerated us. We did chase them. We had champions at the base. We had a PowerPoint presentation that they could go back and review. We did have the VEST definitions printed out. It is a proprietary tool, so we ask them, please, no sharing outside of the folks who are working on the study. But we had the definitions printed out and the QR code on the other side so that they had that readily available for them in their chatting areas and in, you know, their workspace in the ambulance so that they could refer to that so that we were ensuring we were all launching from the same definitions to get the credible data. So there was, buy-in from the base leadership was important to us, but it was also meaningful to them. And this really empowered us to, you know, forge full force straight ahead. And it wasn't as hard as you might think it would be because it had meaning. It gave them great meaning and they are all feeling this. And, you know, being part of something that is blazing a trail and that will become foundational, no doubt in my mind. And that was our goal. This will become foundational for so many other launching points for more studies that help give us more proactive agency in these situations versus a reactive response, which is typically where we're at right now. So there was work and it was day to day. Trust me, every single day it was got to stay on it, see who we're chasing. And I also pulled reports from our EPCS system that gave us data. You know, we could get names of who was on the crew at the time just to try to make things more simple. Automated API automation of the data itself into Power BI so that we could merge and truly correlate what, you know, what was matching and what was not matching. So we used technology to our benefit because that would have been enormously time intensive had we not.
Definitely appreciate you sharing that. You put a lot of thought into this, and I could definitely see at these agencies how having had a colleague who was unfortunately directly affected in the worst way possible could really impact some of that buy-in. And then having those champions at the site, so it's not just you all as the researchers coming in from the ivory tower, but having somebody there who's based at the site. Mm-hmm. Helps, I'm sure. Wanted to ask also a follow-up question, since this is more in, you're talking about real-world EMS practice, but we have mm-hmm. a lot of students that join us, a lot of EMS educators, and they're probably thinking, how could we take this to apply to our initial education setting? We're often training these folks. They need to start off with every practice scenario, BSI, scene safe. Okay, check the box, scene is safe, we're good. But we know that those times when it's sort of staged for police are there, often you already have the police resources or already thinking about scene safety issues, so they're not maybe as risky. But these situations can be super dynamic. And how could we instill that into students at that initial education phase? How do you see your work being adapted, since I'm sure it certainly fits in there?
Dr. Sanal, do you want to respond to that?
It's the awareness, because a lot of time is we're not aware, and then also a lot of agency does not have, as the shows, some EMS agency do not have well-written policy and procedure, and not enough, even clinician having training. So I think it's the awareness is a key factor, both educator, also agencies. We have like a Kathy working for agency and having all this study increase awareness of all clinicians there. I think same thing goes to educator as well, that talking about this topic and sharing the evidence like a journal club is a good way. So I think that's what will helpful for that piece. Yeah.
And my hope is that this will become embedded into our EPCS system. That honestly is my hope. That's you know, where I'm hoping this leads to, is that we develop tools that are so, have such efficacy in their utilities that we embed them in the EPCS system, which is what I know hospital systems have done with the ABRAT in the ED setting.
That's and that correct. Is my
Yeah,
I don't know if that helps. Yeah.
I also hope that this becomes incorporated more broadly, and you've already got my brain turning on, if these are the three observational things, can we go even further upstream and start applying this at the dispatch center
with exactly.
You with earlier?
Exactly, Remley. Yes.
I do want to take an audience question since we have one in the chat, and I know that I have the unpopular task of wrapping us up, but Devin has a great question in the chat, and I'm going to take a stab at it, and Dr. Senil is going to have to keep me honest. It says, at the score of 5, there seems to be this drop off in the line, and the figure that we're viewing is figure 3. But my take on this, and we'll see if I'm right, is that one, the score of 5 is extraordinarily rare, and that only 7 people had it, and that the only way to get a score of 5 was that the patient had to be recorded as aggressive and threatening and confused without agitation, and that's just not a very common presentation.
Exactly.
So that size is probably too small for us to draw a conclusion that the line doesn't truly continue.
Right.
Neil, do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah. You know, sometimes when you do actual, especially clinical study, and the curve is too perfect, then, mm-hmm.
Never trust the perfect curve.
Yeah. So I was actually glad to see that that there's a little dip there and that the curve is not absolutely perfect. And you're exactly right, too. It's an artifact of how you can get the score of 5. And it turns out there are only 7 out of some 9,000 patients who ended up getting score of 5. And it happened that with a small sample size that there were no violent patients who had that score of 5. So this is the nature of, imperfect world and imperfect tool.
A lot of my research has been imperfect. So I appreciate that aspect of, it doesn't mean that there's any problem with the tool for the audience. It means
right.
Normal real world data, and it's just an
exactly.
Uncommon presentation, which is a finding in and of itself, actually.
Right.
So I think this is really great. I do have to wrap us up, but I want to thank the authors once again for their work and ongoing dedication to such an important tool. I think this has an opportunity because it's fast and simple and adopted to EMS that we can really see effects of this. And I'm hoping also, as you all have mentioned, to see increased adoption and testing this in further settings, because this was with 2 organizations and we certainly want to see it scale up and continue to learn. So thank you to our authors. Once again, really appreciate you taking the time to not only do this study and publish this study, but share your findings with this audience. And I hope to have you back when the next study is published.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. And for those of you who are listening and who are fans or soon to be fans, as a reminder, we've got the education version of Journal Club that will be happening this month, Friday, May 23rd. And we will be back here with the clinical podcast on the second Monday of every month at noon central. That will be June 9th. So big thank you to all once again, and we look forward to nerding out with you next time.
We hope you have enjoyed and learned from this PCRF Journal Club. Please share it with other interested EMS professionals. An archive of past Journal Clubs can be found at pcrfpodcast.org. You can also find us on Facebook at PCRF at UCLA and on our website, prehospitalcare.org. A special thank you to our sponsors, Limmer Education, providing educational tools for success at every stage of your EMS journey, and ESO, dedicated to improving community health and safety through the power of data.